Brian Mayhern has been on the Indianapolis City County Council for a while. Last year, he was vice president of the City County Council. And being fair to Brian Mayhern has been like a Jeremiah. He has been like a John the Baptist on a number of issues, ranging from TIFs, ranging from I've had emails from folks saying standing up for the little guy, standing up for the common man and woman in this city and county. So I just want to say that at the outset that, you know, Brian Mayhern and I probably have a lot more in common than not in common. On Monday night, Brian Mayhern did some things that kind of, you know, got me a little discombobulated, got a lot of people in our community, Democrats and others, discombobulated. After the program went off yesterday, Brian Mayhern called. We had a civil conversation. He is here, and I invited him on the program. He is here now, and we're proud to welcome City County Councilor Brian Mayhern. How are you?
I'm good, Amos, and I appreciate you having me on the show. I'd appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk a little bit more about the events of Monday night, but more importantly, the context of it. I think when you started off the other side of the story, I don't think it's the other side. Mm-hmm. It's all the other parts of the story. And so you mentioned I served as the vice president last year. I served right next to President Lewis for most of the year. And at the end of the year, decided not to seek leadership again. But let me first say that last year and the years, well, actually prior to last year, my entire first term on the council, I watched Republicans raise taxes. I watched them give away monies to developers and sports teams. I watched them steal future revenues through the parking meter deal. I watched them basically disregard the needs within all of our communities for public safety. I watched them push through a number of charter schools without any regard for the impact on IPS and how we need to do what we can to improve IPS. My children go to IPS. Mm-hmm. And then we last saw, at the very last minute, the 11th hour, a power grab with the redrawing of the maps in what I think is a clear violation, and I think the courts have agreed is a clear violation of state law. So when I was against those things, and I wasn't against them because they were being perpetrated by Republicans. I was against those things because they were wrong, they were the wrong priorities, and they were the wrong methods. I hoped that when we had the election in 2011 that things would be better under Democrats. And I think for the most part last year, we held the line. We did a number of good things. We held the TIF Study Commission that was chaired by Steve Talley, who is a well-respected member of the Indianapolis community, well-respected not just as a Democrat, not just as a former president of the council, but as a distinguished member of the community, someone who has given and continues to give to the community. He chaired that effort. We produced a more than 100-page report showing that TIFs, while important economic development, have to be done in ways that don't hurt our community, don't shift dollars away from essential services like schools, public transportation, and other municipal corporations like the library, even city services.
Right.
And yet what we saw at the end of last year was very concerning to me. We saw Councilor Talley basically whacked in a committee meeting to allow the TIF proposal and Mass Ave to push through. Mm-hmm. A distinguished member like Steve Talley was whacked so that the TIF proposal could go through, which it did. And we now know that TIF proposal has resulted in development that is grossly over budget, despite giving a cash payment initially of $5 million to developers. And we're now playing musical chairs on Mass Ave, moving the Red Cross so that we can make room for the fire station and make room for the development and like. Then we saw something that was very disconcerting to me. And we saw a person that I had served with next to in the council, President Lewis, participate in the giveaway of another $10 million to the Pacers. Mm-hmm. This was in the face of being told repeatedly that the CIB had no money to contribute for public safety. We passed what I believe to be a legal and fair and appropriate pilot. There was a precedent for it, asking for money for all the public safety services that CIB receives. They pulled out their pockets and said they're empty. Mm-hmm. But then they came up with another $10 million for the Pacers. We've also seen what is the increase in taxes that makes it harder for regular folks to go to the games. It's concerning to me, as one of the benefits that President Lewis has is to be able to go to events, not just Pacer games or Colts games, any event held at those facilities free of charge. if there's a circus, if there's a concert, she can do that. And, you know, as a member of the CIB, that's her right. But when the council passed a tax that made it harder for folks to go, when there are members of the council who not only won't pay the tax increase, they don't pay the existing tax, they don't even pay the price of admission. Now, one of the perks of serving on the CIB is to be able to attend those games. But I think it's a little bit difficult to swallow for average folks when people in positions of power do things like raise taxes on events that they attend for free and that they'll have to pay. We saw the continuation of the push of charter schools. In fact, over the last 8 months, we've passed more charter schools than we have in the previous 5 years. Mm-hmm. We have clearly some difficulties and struggles within IPS, but we have no sense of how charter schools fit in with IPS. How are the students that don't make their way to charter schools going to succeed? And how do we do that? Instead, what we've seen is we've seen a basic rapid fire, machine gun style, issuance of charters to schools. Then we learned that a mayoral charter school, through the help of a high-placed state official, manipulated grades so that they were not taken over by the city. Yet IPS schools that were taken over by the city are now overseen by the mayor's office, receive money the mayor's office receives. The charter schools that are overseen don't pay. And yet we continue to see issuance and issuance after charter schools. Councilor Barth, who I respect, but he hosted committee meeting after committee meeting on how we're going to improve charter schools, not how are we going to implement it with IPS. In fact, the most recent one, we've had a board member of IPS talk about how it would be a good idea to share the transportation resources and the school resources within IPS with charter schools. Mm-hmm. Not how are we going to improve IPS, not how are we going to build IPS, but how can we give more to charter schools at the cost of IPS? So then we see that we now have basically discussion of stealing future revenues. Mm-hmm. The mayor's most recent proposal, President Lewis, I understand, is a co-sponsor of this and supportive, in which we're going to take future revenues, bond against it, to build streets and sidewalks now, with no sense of how we're going to build sidewalks.
This borrowing $150 million.
I think it's $135 million.
Off the new Capital One credit card.
Yeah. And so we are engaging and continue to engage in the very practices that I was opposed to, not because they were being done by Republicans, but because they were wrong. But ultimately, these were all just policy disagreements. I had policy disagreements with Madam President, and that's why I left leadership. I still supported her as president, but I felt it was important that someone serve with her who had a more of a common overlap in what those policies would be. Mm-hmm. And I did. I supported her. But then what I have seen over the last 6 to 8 months is more disconcerting things. Not only the growing disagreements in policy, but I've seen recently what can be described as nothing else than a disregard for the council rules. Mm-hmm. When in the minority, as I did serve my first term, I was able to introduce proposals, have those proposals heard within the timely allotment under council rules, and I was able to vote and serve on committees. And those committees were outlined by my minority leader, Joanne Sanders. At no time did my proposals be held without being heard in committee, mm-hmm. and at no time was my assignment to committee interfered by my majority leaders of the Republican caucus. Mm-hmm. Yet we've seen that those kinds of events have taken place despite the fact that there is a clear control, be it numbers and be it in positions, by members of my caucus, the Democrats. And so I fail to understand why it is that we have to cheapen really the process to undermine the legitimacy of the council by denying duly elected councilors, maybe Republicans, maybe in a minority party. I was there. I served. Mm-hmm. And I have a deep appreciation of the importance to be able to represent my constituents. My mom lives down in Franklin Township. Mm-hmm. I don't think she voted for Councilor Aaron Freeman. Mm-hmm. But is she not entitled to have her counselor, regardless of his party, be able to serve on committees, even if he's not going to vote that way? Perhaps she could contact him and say, I feel this way, and he might represent her interest. Maybe he wouldn't because they philosophically disagree. But I believe that there's something fundamentally important about preserving minority party rights. Mm-hmm. My entire time on the council, I have advocated for the rights of workers, the rights of disadvantaged neighborhoods, disadvantaged students and children on substantive grounds. But yet I'm not going to say anything when I see the kind of procedural slights that are given to people who are in the positions that I once held. And let me just finish by saying that at the end of the day, we are facing a difficult budget. And I had my faith shaken in the process, whether or not the process was fair. I spoke out about that. I was removed by President Lewis and by Councilor Brown, which is their right, not only, I said ultimately, but as my caucus leaders, to remove me from those committees because that's the system, okay? But that was not communicated to me, but that's a matter within my caucus. But ultimately, there was an interference with the committee assignments by the minority party. I'm not here to defend Mike McQuillan or any of the Republicans. I'm here to defend the right of every member to have their committee assignments dictated by the people within their caucus. And when faced with that kind of unfairness, and to understand that if people in majority positions like me don't speak out when people who are in disadvantaged minority positions are being taken advantage of, how is it that anybody who's in a minority position, a disadvantaged position, ever makes a leg up? Whether you're talking about my family at the turn of the previous century being greeted with Irish need not apply signs when they went to apply for work, or when my grandparents worked in the Catholic Interracial Council in the 1960s to try to bridge the gap between African Americans and whites within our community to understand that we have more in common than we have differences. That is the basis on which I approach my job to the council. So I am a Democrat, but I'm not an apologist for Democrats who do things that I can't defend. And when those things interfere with the principles of basic fairness, then I will speak out. And then when speaking out is not sufficient, when asking for a committee meeting is not sufficient, to have that done at the council, then I believe it is a fair question for doing what was done Monday night.
Let me ask it, and I appreciate, and I'm sure the listeners, you know, appreciate hearing you, and I think you're speaking, you know, not only from your head, but you're speaking from your heart. Was the purpose in Monday night to send a message, or was the purpose to change the government, the governance of the council, and who would govern the council?
I think that the basic problem that the council faces and council leadership faces is a failure to understand that the people speak. We listen to our voters every 4 years, but the council has provisions that at any point in time, if there is a loss of confidence in that leadership can be, you can have a question placed at a next meeting. It doesn't happen overnight. The motion that I made Monday night was merely to put a question on the next meeting to talk about the appropriateness of that. Mm-hmm. You know, some people talk about it, I think, as a mob. Wait a minute, a mob? I mean, is that what our voters are every 4 years when we invite them to come to the polls and give us the legal and constitutional input? You know, the councilors serve their constituents. Councilors don't serve at the pleasure of the leaders as members of the council. Council leaders serve at the pleasure of the councilors. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that there is a loss of confidence within the councilors, how that does not then reflect in a loss of confidence within the public or vice versa, that's critically important. How those things are defended, in fact, they're not defended. They can't be. To say that we will not follow the rules, when John Barth is quoted in our paper as saying, the 45-day rule is an important rule, and it
should be. What's the 45-day rule? Because listeners may not understand what that is.
The 45-day rule says that if you introduce a proposal, it's going to be heard in committee within 45 days. Mm-hmm. That's because councilors introduce proposals when they expect them to be heard.
Is that a longstanding rule?
Yes. Look, Amos, I chaired the Rules Committee up until this year. I chaired the Rules Committee the entirety of last year. Mm-hmm. We always heard proposals within 45 days. I never not heard a proposal as a committee chairman in longer than 45 days, even the ones I disagreed with. And that is so important because all counselors have a right to introduce proposals and all counselors have a right to make motions. And I had a right to make a motion to have a discussion about the appropriateness of leadership. You say send a message. I don't know how I tried to send a message. In prior meetings we had before the council and in committee, I expressed ever-growing concern at what was a disregard for process, what was a disregard for people who served in the minority, not because I am a Republican, not because I want a Republican president of the council, but because I believe that the legitimacy of anything is related to not just what you do, but how you do it. I complained about what the Republicans did last year or the previous year and when I was on the council, not just for what they did, but how they did it. And when they did, and when the Ballard administration did, I absolutely called them to task. In fact, when you talk about asking somebody for their job, when you ask them to stop serving, I stood with Melinda Kennedy and I stood with President Lewis during the campaign of 2011 mm-hmm. and called for the resignation of Frank Straub. Mm-hmm. Now, Maggie Lewis, president now, participated in that. Mm-hmm. She stood there with me and with Melina mm-hmm. to call for that resignation. Mm-hmm. I called for an accountability Monday night. And that accountability was answered by a tweet or retweet from President Lewis, said that you're not going to take him out this time, boy. I didn't attempt to take anybody out. I asked to have a reasoned discussion within the council about the appropriateness of leadership. To get that kind of response is similar to the response that Ballard gave me when I did the TIF stuff, where he sent a Twitter message saying Brian Mayhern is holding up thousands of jobs. That's just ridiculous.
Before I take a break and take phone calls, I want to make sure that the listeners clearly, you know, understand you. And I'm going to use the classic line from The Godfather. Because you said a lot about President Lewis, and I want to be absolutely clear. Is this personal or is this business?
Oh, it doesn't have anything to do with personal. It doesn't even have anything to do with business. It has to do with principle.
Mm-hmm.
Because is it easy to do what I did? Was that something that I did on the snap of a decision? No. That was something that was a growing culmination over the last probably 8 months.
Well, did you approach McQuillan or any of the Republicans and say, hey, I'm thinking of doing this. How do I get this done? Did you research the motion on your own? Did their counsel, Elrod, the son of the great Republican counsel to Bert Servais, did they come to you and say, hey, you know, Brian, here's how you, if you want to do this, here's how you do it?
No, I think, it would be interesting to have a recount of how anything happens on the council. But ultimately, what Monday night represented was a meeting of the minds of not a political, philosophical brethren, but was a meeting of the minds of those people who are concerned about process. Let me tell you that simply because that motion was made does not mean that President Lewis would have been removed, number one. Number two, if that had been the case, there is no foregone conclusion that Mike McQuillan would have been the president of the council. It seems to me that if you take that out to eventuality, that there very well could have been another Democrat step forward who would have been able to pick up the pieces if that was necessary. But see, what we have, we don't even have the discussion. We don't even have the answer. We don't even have the discussion. Instead, what we have is representations of nothing I disagree with. President Lewis is graceful. President Lewis certainly, in some regards, has been bipartisan. The question is, has she governed the council at all times in an appropriate way relative to objectivity? Have the rules been followed? Mm-hmm. Have counselors always been recognized? Has the process, as was outlined in the council rules for both Republicans who are in power and Democrats in power, been followed? Were proposals that were sent by the council to specific committees sent to those committees, or were they rerouted at her sole discretion? I think those are fair questions.
We're talking with Brian Mayhern, City County Councilor, hearing his side of the story. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We'll take a break. Allow him to take a breath. We'll hear, the lines are open. We'll hear from all of you. Or you can send me an email, praiseindy.com, or a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. It's afternoon. Oh, let's see, tomorrow. Who's here? President Lewis will be here tomorrow. We're talking more about the budget tomorrow. We may even ask Brian Mayhern, does he know why 25% of the budget of Indy Parks was cut? Hold on, don't answer yet. Hold on, think about that one. All that and more. It's afternoons with Amos for a Thursday, a Wednesday. All right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's afternoon's name is with Brian Mayhern. Before I go to calls, Brian Mayhern, we read on this program yesterday a memorandum that was dated August the 19th, and it was sent from, I believe his name is Richard Elrod, who is the Republican attorney to the Republican caucus. And it was sent to Michael McQuillan, the minority leader, and it outlined the motion that needed to be made, the sequence. It had a copy of the internal code of the City County Council in terms of process and what have you. Did you ever see that memorandum?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did. You know, you look and you say, is that inappropriate? I think maybe is the suggestion. You know, when Councilor Ossoli, Councilor Simpson worked on the MassAv TIF, mm-hmm. there were a number of documents that they had access to that they used that were prepared by the city. Some were prepared perhaps by the developer or the folks who were involved in representing the developer. I don't believe that their access to that information was inappropriate. Mm-hmm. I believe that the merits of that need to be judged on its merits, the merits of what I did and the demerits of what I did, what I participated in, needs to be judged on those merits and those merits alone. If I thought that there was a better way, I thought that there was a different approach, mm-hmm. I think that approach would have appeared over the last 8 months. I tried. And yet I saw what was ever increasing, and I don't use this word lightly, but arrogance. I mean, when you remove counselors from committees without the consent of their leader, when you remove counselors within your own caucus without notification, when you summarily take what is powers that not are specifically—
Do you regard this as a dictatorship?
Well, to the extent that people characterize what I participated in and what happened as a mob, yeah. I mean, if you're going to contrast the two things as being if people who are concerned speak out are a mob, then leaders who don't listen are dictators. Mm-hmm. I think if the shoe fits, you should wear it.
Let me go to Kareem at 239-1310. Hi there.
You know, this is funny. How you doing?
Fine.
Man, you know, Mr. Mahern, is it?
Brian Mahern.
Are you a Democrat or a Republican?
Sir, I am an absolute Democrat, and I have the credentials.
Hold on, let him finish.
Okay. Now, the reason why I ask that because, hello?
Kareem, I need you to turn your radio down completely down.
Okay, hold up.
That would help me so I don't hear myself.
Okay,
go ahead.
Now, the reason why I ask, because you vacillate between the two. When Amos asks you certain questions, you sound like a Republican, then a Democrat. That's one thing. Two, your mother. Now, you mentioned something about she was helping out on something when she dealt with white and blacks, and they said she said that she saw that we had more in common than difference.
No, that was I was speaking about my grandparents. My grandparents participated in an effort to try to bridge the divide between the African-American community and the white community in the 1960s in the Indianapolis Catholic Church.
Okay, so, now, the reason why I ask that is, how do you feel about that today?
Oh, I worked on the council with Councilor Brown to try to improve minority participation on the police merit review board. I worked with Councilor Brown and other members of the minority caucus within my caucus to try to improve minority hiring within the police and fire department. I know that the police and fire serve some of the most sensitive situations in our community, and to have someone there from your community when you're having a difficult situation, medical or a domestic problem, to have someone from your community there at that point in time is critically important. I've worked hard on those issues. I've worked hard advocating on behalf of Latino hotel workers in Indianapolis. I work side by side with Councilor Lewis on that. So, I mean, I'm in not total disagreement with Councilor Lewis. I merely am concerned about some events that have happened over, like I said, the last 6 to 8 months.
Okay, cool. Now, Amos, I'm going to get to my point and get off the air.
Okay.
Mr. Mahern, you know, I've been dealing in this city for a long time and dealing with what you call white and black issues. Since you're that sensitive, would you want to change places with me? Well, you become black and I become white and deal with this? Would you want to do that if you could? Two, every time a woman gets in a leadership position, whether she's Caucasian or African-American, and she don't listen to a male species, this is the kind of reaction that you get. You know, Mayor Ballard, Amos said something about dictatorship. we feel that Mayor Ballard is a dictator, okay? But I don't hear you really dealing with that issue. He ain't listening to nothing that the Democrats is really talking about. And maybe Maggie Lewis is dealing with something that she sees within her own vision and her own expertise from past experience with another councilwoman that was a drum major that she came up under with this city, and she don't choose to go through that path. So what I'm asking you is, he asked you, was it personal or business? And you said principal. Well, principal vacillate between the two, too. So I'm asking you straight up on this radio program, do you have a problem with women in leadership? And the Republican Party, I know they do. So what I'm saying is, you should give this woman the respect and deal with this in the back of the situation of the city-county building downtown instead of bringing it out of here on the radio like you're doing, because adults, to me, on the council, that's how they usually fight their battles. But by her being an African-American and the head of this council, it seemed like you're being the mob, not she being the mob, because you're claiming that she's just disregarding principles, policies, and procedures. I'm quite sure that woman's too intelligent to do that. There's something that you don't like, and you're not being honest with Amos. So I'll get off the air, Amos. Peace out.
All right, let me let him respond, Counselor.
Well, whether you're white, whether you're black, whether you're Latino, whether you're a woman or a male, not following the rules is wrong. And whether or not if you're a male, a woman calls that out, or if you're a woman, a male calls that out, or if you're white and someone who's an African-American calls that out, that's what makes it right. Talk about dealing with stuff in a back room. You know, I've been on the council for almost 6 years. Every single time I've been in a back room, my constituents get shivved. Nothing good ever happens to my constituents in the back room. Nothing good ever happens to people of disadvantage in the back room. Democracy works out in the public. Backroom deals, indefensible deals, those are done in backrooms. That's why I did what I did after trying what I could in the civil, public ways of the committee meetings and the lead-up to do what I did. I did what I did out of respect for the council. I did that out of respect for the position. You know, so often we're told that people in positions such as Councilor and President Lewis should be respected for the position they hold. I did that out of respect for the position. I did that out of respect for the position, and the position is supposed to be objective, and I think that there are clear instances where there weren't. We unfortunately didn't have that discussion, and I'm happy to have that discussion here and going forward, because it's too critical. Look, the council raises taxes. The council spends public money. The council tells people what they will and will not do. And if they don't do that in a fair way, according to rules, the legitimacy is that undermined, and then people say, well, you know, they don't follow the rules, setting the rules. Why should I follow the rules that they set?
Some of what you talked about in terms of policy, in terms of TIFs, in terms of the priorities of the Ballard administration and some of the priorities that you have concerns about in terms of policy, are things that people are talking about in the neighborhoods, they're talking about in the neighborhood organizations, and will probably be some of the major issues in the 2015 race. Is what happened Monday, is this the opening shot of perhaps you running for mayor either as a Democrat or as an independent in 2015?
You know, Amos, when I first ran for the council, people said, well, he doesn't want to be on the council. He wants to serve in the legislature. You know, his dad served in the legislature. This is just a way station. He's going to stay there for a little bit, and he's going to move on. Mm-hmm. So then when I ran for a second term, they said, well, he doesn't really want to be on the council. He wants to be mayor. Mm-hmm. You know, because if he really wanted to be on the council, he'd run for council, which is what I did. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a lot going on in my personal life. Mm-hmm. I have two children that I have half the time. I'm a single dad. I'm about to be married to a wonderful woman.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Who is absolutely the light of my life and the rock of my Gibraltar. But the suggestion that there is any political motivation or any political gain, in fact, I think you could look at what I did last, on Monday night as certainly people are spinning it as a detriment. I didn't do it as a detriment or a benefit to myself. I did it because the process requires that we do that. Because you know what? Whether I remain on the council or I run for something else, and I'm not dodging that question, because, you know, at the end of the day, nobody decides to not do something. They decide to do something, and I've not decided to do anything, okay? But at the end of the day, we're not going to do this. I'm not going to do it. Members of the council are not going to do it forever. We will spend far more time after we're done looking back at what we did and did not do. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, if I had not done what I did Monday night, I would have regretted not speaking out more forcefully for minority rights, and not because I agreed with all of what they said, or I have friendships or any relationship with any of those members. I did that because the council has to be seen as a legitimate organization, and when rules are not followed,
right,
That is undermined.
239-1310. Let me go to Reverend Phillips right quick. Reverend?
Yes, how you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
Man, I've been knowing you for 20 years, and you do a good job at speaking out to the community. I can give you credit. Okay, this guy is the vice president.
No, he was the vice president for a year, yes.
Yeah, okay, he's the vice president for a year.
Yeah.
Okay. My question is, do you know the Lord? Do you really know the Lord? Because now the president, Lewis, she see a vision. That vision is coming from God. Now, I know some of y'all folks be sitting on that council board. Y'all don't see what she see. You know, she sees
right
something where she can make a change. She see what God gave her. Yeah, but I don't understand why y'all wanna get rid of her and put somebody else in the in the seat.
All right, Reverend Phillips, let me kind of amplify. What Reverend Phillips is talking about is what a lot of people in the African-American community are talking about. They are taking your action probably more personally than others are taking it because she's a woman, because she's African-American.
Right, and the simple question is were the rule followed or not? Do our women leaders have a special exception from following the rules? Do our African-American leaders have an exception from following the rules? I would argue no. I would argue they shouldn't have that, and they don't have that, and they in large measure don't do that. She is a wonderful person, but in her capacity as the president, rules were broken. She is the chairman of that committee that did not hear a proposal within the 45 days. Mm-hmm. She participated in what is meddling in the affairs of the minority assignment. That didn't happen. Council Lewis served in the minority with me. Her committee's assignments were not dictated by the majority leaders. That was not done to her. So, I mean, to the extent that we ask, the references do unto others, well, that was not done unto her. So that which she did, you have to question that. To the extent that she stood with me and called for Frank Straub's resignation, she established that it is within the perfectly permissible realm publicly to call for someone in power to step down or to be removed if they've not fulfilled their obligation in the estimation of the person making that charge.
Let me go to Sam right quick at 239-1310. Sam?
Hey, Amos. Hey, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, sir.
Okay. Hey, Brian. First of all, let me start by saying I support what you're doing. And you don't have to come on the radio and defend yourself. I mean, you've done more for the black community in the past couple of years than some of the black counselors that were there that we hope would look out for us. And as far as President Lewis, I think Maggie should step down because, you know, giving the Pacers $10 million, that's one of the reasons Jose went Republican. And some of the Democrats, you have backbone, you have courage, and like Johnny Cochran would say, you're speaking truth to power. And that one guy that just called in saying that Maggie had a vision, in my opinion, yes, she has a vision, getting some more money, and then he said that she is probably there to make a change. I think she's there to help to get some change. But what you're doing, my brother, I appreciate you. I want to tell the black community that you are not a racist. I appreciate you, and Maggie needs to step down, and some of these other Democrats, you need to man up, woman up, you know, and get on board, because Maggie needs to leave. And my last point, when Tony Duncan and someone else was trying to, bully Michelle Scott in the court down there, nobody came on the radio and defended Michelle Scott, the judge. So just because you are a white gentleman and you disagree with a black female, people want to label you as being a racist. I think she should leave. My mother, Julia Carson, I think my mother would have had a conversation with Maggie and say, Maggie, you're not doing anything. You need to go somewhere else. But my brother, I support you, and I wish you the best.
I appreciate it. Let me go to Lena at 239-1310. Hi there.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It sounds as if you're whining. If you have a legitimate complaint or a issue, I think that should go forward. But it sounds to me as if you are whining. People are saying she's giving away money. Listen, she is not the first person to have done it. I know that these things that are going on just did not start with her. You've been there long enough to have spoken out before now. So it appears when I hear you talk, because for one, you're dodging a lot of questions, especially the one about the lawyer and did you know about this memo?
I said I did. I said I had it.
Oh, okay. Well, I missed that because I was standing there listening to the radio. But it does appear and it does sound as if you are whining. We need to hear what exactly is going on so we will know as the community what's going on, not a bunch of whining and complaining about I didn't get what I want.
All right, I appreciate the call. I also got Brian May here on a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. He sounds bitter. Are you bitter?
No.
Can you understand why people would feel that way?
Well, you know, was Martin Luther King bitter? Was Gandhi bitter? Was Nelson Mandela bitter? No. But they asked for change, and they asked for change from very powerful people. They didn't flinch at that. They didn't say, you know, people are going to say mean things about me. They weren't bitter. I'm not bitter. What I am is disappointed. Yes, these things were done before. Yes, they didn't start with her. They should stop with her.
Let me go to Brenda at 239-1310. Then we'll take a break. Hi, Brenda. Brenda? Brenda going once? Brenda going twice? Brenda three times? We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moment. We must answer Brenda's question. We'll be back with our remaining moments with City County Councilor Brian Mayhern on Friday. See, Brian will be listening on Friday because our Friday friend Abdul will try to explain the unexplainable. He will probably explain to me that a 25% cut in the parks budget is not a cut. He will probably explain to me that it is wonderful that the mayor's budget is being increased 3.4%. He will probably explain to me that my Excel spreadsheet in my computer is wrong and that we're spending more money on police when the spreadsheet says actually in the budget we're spending less money. And next Thursday, Chris, you know, we talked to Max Siegel from Moscow last week, right? Guess who we're going to talk to next week? The president of Indiana University, Michael McRobbie. Guess where he's going to be? South Africa. Oh, now that's going to be a real test. Twice the NSA will be intercepting my calls. This after this with Amos after these. Back to the phones and Birdie. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
I wanted to make a couple comments to Mayhern.
Yes.
Mike, just a question. What are your plans from this point? Who do you think would want you after this? You have a mouth on you. It really needs to stop. You really talk too much. Some of your opinions is they're not moral. You're talking about a moral issue. This is nothing to do with Christ. It has to do with policies. So cut the bullshit talking about it's a moral issue.
All right, that's enough. Let me go to Fred at 239-1310. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
I want to talk to Mr. Mayhern. It's my understanding that in the caucus, did he not participate in the Democratic caucus in the decision with the majority leader, Mr. Vern Brown, to reduce the size of the minority participation on the council committees? And when the vote was taken, was he not present? And did he not also advise Mrs. Lewis at that time that it was okay? I find this strange that he waited till the middle of her administration to decide to remove her, to vote with the majority and remove her. He's also had a committee policy statement on TIFs, which is my understanding. I have not heard any more about it after they had that commission on TIFs. And what is the position on that at the present time?
All right. Two questions. Is there something on TIFs that's kind of, you know, been tabled, hanging around? It could come off the table at any time.
What happened with TIFs was we did the study commission. We came up with the proposals. We came up with some recommendations that I wanted to be binding that said that we wouldn't allow TIFs to capture what was existing property. TIFs only supposed to create and use what it creates. And we saw that after we did that TIF study commission, that there were Vice President Barth as a member of the Rules Committee essentially gut those guidelines to allow for the Broad Ripple TIF to move forward, to allow for the capture of not only existing property in the Broad Ripple garage, but a garage that is subsidized with public dollars. And now we learn that TIF may well be used to not help in the more disadvantaged areas, as we were told, but to help build a fancy grocery store.
So there's nothing in the pipeline or that's been tabled that could be taken off the table to kind of restrict TIFs.
Well, we tried in the council to put forward what was a council policy, and it basically outlines all the things that need to be provided and certain thresholds, and then it says at the request of Councilor Barth an amendment that says if any or all of this is not provided, it doesn't matter. So we passed those we passed that policy, but you know, if a policy doesn't have teeth and if it doesn't have thresholds, then it's really not a policy. And in fact, that policy certainly didn't stop for the Broad Ripple TIF from happening. I'm not aware of anything that's out there. I still believe that TIFs are vitally important as an economic development tool. But know this. Know that if you are diverting $65, $70 million a year into the downtown TIF, if you're giving away tens of millions of dollars, now approaching $50 million to the Pacers, is it any coincidence that we don't have money for police officers? Is it any coincidence we don't have money for sidewalks? Is it any coincidence that they will come back, and I say they, the powers that be, and say we need another tax, public safety tax? We had a 0.65 or 65%, however you want to think about it, tax back in 2007 for quote-unquote public safety. Now the elimination of the homestead credit is being fashioned as a public safety tax. We have all of these stormwater fees that they say need to increase.
Right.
And the question is, what happened to the money that was paid originally for that stuff? Well, that money was shunted over to sports teams and to developers, so now that hole has to be placed by reaching one more time in the taxpayer's pocket.
Three other things right quick. Is there a reason why this couldn't have been done at the end of the year at the council reorganization time and not in at this point in the year?
Well, given what we face with the budget, I felt it was important that we have – look, my question was posed as, does the council have confidence in President Lewis? The council does. That motion carried. Some say I shouldn't have done it unless I could have succeeded. It's interesting. I mean, those folks, they wanted that to succeed. No, what this was a question. We're going into a difficult budget season. The council had voted to sustain its confidence in President Lewis. We'll see what we come out with on the other side of the budget and what next year might hold rather relative to council leadership in light of how difficult that budget's going to be.
And one final quick question. When you served as chair of the Rules Committee, every one of the things you had before you came out in 45 days or less.
I was not aware that there was a proposal that was introduced and not dealt with in 45 days. And I will tell you this, if I was made aware of that, my response would not have been what Councilor Barr's response was, which was double speak, that this is an important rule we need to follow, but we're not going to follow it. So I subject to check, I'm not aware that happened. If it did, that would be sorely disappointing to me. I have no information that that's the case. But like I said, I wouldn't give it short shrift and say, well, no big deal. It is a big deal. Absolutely is a big deal.
Brian Mayhern, we appreciate you coming in. Thanks very, very much. And again, congratulations to you.
Thank you. I always appreciate it, Amos. You're such a
not congratulating on Monday night. This is congratulating because he's going to go down the aisle and
yep.
Marry. I bet she's a very lovely young lady.
Well, she's sitting right here. You can judge for yourself.
She is. She's Chris has been blushing the whole hour. Thanks very, very much. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about the budget with the leadership of the Indianapolis City County Council. It's After News with Amos. Have a great day. I'm Amos Brown. We'll see you tomorrow, live at 1.